Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I've not seen an Egg Chasers rugby podcast studio looking so different in the space of a week. We've got the... JB is bouncing with excitement, even on his broken backside.
That's right.
He is bouncing. Hands in. Yeah, this is going to be a difficult one, Phil. Hands in, pod on three. One, two, three. Pod! Pod! Thank you very much for listening to the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast, a podcast that you can find on Acast, on their app, or on iTunes as well, and keep your reviews and ratings on iTunes coming. Thank you very much. At Rugby Podcast on Twitter. It's getting so much closer to the World Cup. JB, you all right there, mate?
Not really.
What's going on? JB's having some trouble with his microphone.
Damn it,
he's fixed it. I was trying to sabotage him so he couldn't say anything on this week's podcast.
We lose half our listenership if that happened.
Firstly, this podcast is 24 hours later. Now, one of two things is the reason for that. One is because my grandparents' 80th birthday in Dorset meant that I got back into Manchester about midnight on Sunday night.
In Dorset?
Sorry?
In Dorset?
Yeah. What? In Dorset? I don't get it.
Sorry, it's a rubbish gag.
Gag. It was very funny.
In Dorset.
Was it good? Did you endorse it?
Ah, okay. That was bad.
Come on. Sorry, Tim.
Yeah, I would. So either that was the reason, or it's the other reason, possible reason, is that me and Phil needed an extra 24 hours to digest what happened in the Stade de France on Saturday night. Stuart Lancaster's got some proper head scratching to do over these next couple of days before he picks his final 31-man World Cup squad, doesn't he?
Indeed he has.
He really does, yeah. Because what was supposed to be virtually a starting 15 has definitely raised some questions.
We've got the flip chart back out in the podcast studio. We're looking at it right now. I've put the 39 names that Stuart Lancaster will have to cull 8 of, and we're going to go through that process in a little bit. We're going to dissect that match. We're going to talk about the World Cup squads that have already been announced. We've got a bumper edition of Stash Watch today, looking at all the stash that's been being launched in the last 7 days with very, very, very... Never more so have we had varying quality than this week's Stash Watch. And Phil, you got a quiz sorted?
I have.
And Gloucester's all-time... all-time team in the professional era as well.
Yeah.
So listen up for that. But JB!
Yes.
Apologies, boys.
Do we have to talk about the England match?
Oh, I am gutted, but I don't really want to get too carried away with this. Because I know the media are, and on Twitter everything you read is like doom and gloom. But a week ago, it wasn't so bad.
Well, what do you read into it then?
Well, I read into it that most of those players haven't had a game for at least 4 months. I read into it that George Ford didn't have his best start, but based on a very poor platform.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That is the most concerning thing for me, that the scrum and the line out. Now, the scrum I can forgive because that pitch was atrocious.
Mm-hmm.
And both won 4, lost 1.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Oh, that makes me feel a bit better.
There is something to say about the quality of your own scrummaging ball.
Yeah, that's true.
Which, yes.
You know,
best tweet I saw about the state of the pitch it wasn't one of yours, JB. It was someone said that the French bought the turf for the Stade de France at a Millennium Stadium car boot sale.
Very good.
It was reminiscent of that, wasn't
yes.
it?
It was.
It was pathetic, actually, for a high-level sports event.
Yeah.
No two ways about it.
But I can forgive the frailties in the scrum.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see how they do on a proper rugby pitch. But the line-out just wasn't good enough. And if Tom Youngs is going to be starting, it has to improve. There was 13 lineouts and they lost 4. The 9 that they won were disrupted. It wasn't going to hand. It was being fumbled down. And while it doesn't sound too bad, it really was. That just led to the whole game being disrupted. So Youngs wasn't getting good ball. He was then slow with his pass. So Ford was getting poor ball. His decision making wasn't great. His kicking wasn't very good. Kicked too much early on. Do you know, after half an hour, England had made 58 tackles. How many had France made? Half an hour gone. 58.
Oh, I don't know. Let's go 30?
22.
4.
What? Fact. That's incredible.
To half an hour of an international rugby game, France had made 4 tackles.
That is ridiculous. Now, before JB jumps in, because JB has written a thesis on this game. He's a Welshman who is just salivating at what he can say now. And it'll be in stark contrast to JB's own quote from last week going, England are the most tournament-ready team in the world.
Yeah. Last week they were. They genuinely were.
Before you get into that, I think Saturday night's game was the perfect demonstration of why the scrum is such a massive, and the set piece and... it's such a massive part of the game, and why anyone who says that the scrum's just a way to restart a match needs their head checking, because the line-out messed up a lot, like you've said. The scrum is actually, on statistics-wise, it was better than I thought it was from watching the game. But the edge that France had in the scrum, everyone that's played the game knows what that's like when you're on a team that's getting pumped, and it affects everything.
Yeah, it's contagious.
It is. As Phil talked about, it means Ben Youngs had a nightmare passing the ball. George Ford couldn't get on the front foot and release his players. The whole back line started running laterally. Then you start making kicks when you've got players coming onto you that little bit quicker. Your back row are having to run a bit further backwards so they can't get clean, quick ball, and it just gets worse and worse. So I think it's the perfect example, if anyone needed it, that the scrum means so much and why we have to protect the contest at the scrum.
Correct.
And I think that dictated the whole storyline of that game. And it wasn't that George Ford played well. He did have a poor game, but it wasn't just that he had a poor game. The context was he played poorly. And interestingly, we're going to talk about Sippers.
Yeah,
no doubt. Sippers is an example of a fly half that has been experienced in the Premiership the last couple of seasons playing behind a poor pack.
That's very nice.
Ford and Farrell have been orchestrating things behind a dominant pack.
I'm going to have to question that, Tim. How many times do you see Sale losing scrums and lineouts? That's what they're good at.
Oh, it was. I suppose the season before last, much more so. They were getting dominated.
Yeah, last season they showed it up a bit. He's never had a dominant pack, let's say that.
No.
So, Jay, what's your take on the
Welshman on
England?
Well,
it's interesting, isn't it? I mean, I'll be the first one to say I've flip-flopped a lot here. Last week, I was well on the England bandwagon. I thought they looked brilliant. I thought they played with nice front football. They made good decisions. And some of the attacking... it was attacking brilliance.
Yeah.
You know, the team did what a team did, which is, you know, use all of your teamwork to get individuals into space where they can do special stuff. And that was great. But recently, I've been exposed to kind of, you know, two sorts of thoughts when it comes to coaching. There's kind of the WRU style stuff and the ZRFU style stuff. And if we were to get, say, two players, an English player, current English international, and a Welsh international now, and we were to ask them in a paragraph, describe your team, the Welsh guy would probably say, we're a hard-working team, we work on our continuity, we get off the line, we're good in defence, that kind of thing.
It's giving you some Welsh music to carry on talking about.
I honestly think if you ask someone from the English squad, now if you had someone from the English squad said, describe your team, they would just read off a list of things which Stuart Lancaster would like them to talk about. So they'd be talking about good people, we're trying to stamp out negative behaviours as a collective, which, you know, doesn't influence our group dynamic. We're looking at our group of people, not just players. I think it would go on and on and on. I think you would probably wait for about the 11th thing before you mentioned anything about rugby. That's great, but it's not Dawson's Creek. It's it's high-level sport. And I think for a lot of this, all this engendering culture is great if you're running a call centre. But again, that's not what you're doing. So they've got all this wonderful culture, and that's going great. But they forgot to work on the lineouts. They have one backs move. They don't have a seven. You know, at some point, you've got to stand back and think, what are we trying to achieve? If us three here decided we wanted to go up Mount Everest. It would not be enough just to have a real positive mental attitude.
PMA.
Yeah, it just wouldn't be enough. I've been reading some stuff from Stuart Lancaster, which was published this time last year.
Just pause there a second. You can do this over the theme tune from Dawson's Creek. Go on.
Yeah, and he wrote in a piece which he did for the RFU, stuff like it. Yeah, the meaningfulness of the jersey was bringing some players to tears, and then they got their parents to phone in to talk about what it meant for their sons to play for England. Why doesn't he just spend the time working on his lineouts?
Got to remember where he's come from, and why he's been such a positive effect on the whole England camp and the RFU, wider RFU, is he turned around what was described as by players and, you know, people outside off the pitch, a toxic environment. And yeah, he's made it a positive environment. So we've got to give him credit for that.
Well, I would say when you're running a pro sports team, you've got to concentrate on the actual sport itself. And the culture's great. And I think Lancaster would be wonderful at running an academy, probably wonderful at running a club. But he's just got to win a tournament in over the length of 8 weeks.
Well,
that's
all
he needs.
OK, well, let's...
It's like storming a beach, not running a daycare centre.
Well, what we're going to do in a moment is, well, the game is fresh in our mind, and we'll talk about both sides. And by the way, we mentioned it on the last podcast, Louis Picamoles is looking lean and mean.
That French pack. Mm. Now, we spoke about the negativity of the England pack and underperforming at the lineouts and the scrums, but that didn't happen by accident. That is a very experienced, very good French pack. And the lineouts in particular is impressive because they were reading everything and they're getting two jumpers up to compete.
One thing I said last week, and probably the only thing I said last week, which was even close to being correct, was that as soon as these French offloads start going to hand, someone's going to be in trouble. And it just seemed like they went to hand. Louis Picamoles is a wonderful, wonderful, majestic, elegant player.
Looking back to his best, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, definitely.
Here we go. We've got the flip chart right here. Stuart Lancaster, Mike Catt, Graham Rowntree, Andy Farrell are going to be sat in a room, in their little war room in Pennyhill Park.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be shut the door and they're going to go, right, do not disturb. And they're going to have to walk out of that room, taking those 39 names we can see in front of us, sending 8 of them home.
Okay. Well, who are the nicest guys? Because we could probably go with that. I mean, I don't know how much stock you put in these games. I mean, they must put some stock in them, because otherwise, why would you play them? But are they going to have two widescreen TVs up, watch two games side by side, and say, he played well, he's in, he played badly, he's out? Because if that's the case, it's going to be a much different England team than we think it's going to be.
Well, Lancaster has said it will not just be based on the games, it is based on the overall 8 week, 9 week period that they've been in camp, the performances behind closed doors.
Props. So what are we thinking? That you're going to have to lose one of these props?
Corbs.
Corbs is already injured. Well,
got to go.
So we're crossing out Corbs and leaving Vunipola and Marler.
Yes, definitely.
And tight head prop, we're keeping Cole and Wilson. I'm saying you keep Brooks because he can also, at a push, play loose head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I would go with that.
That does help a lot.
So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 people, I was going to say on the plane, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
In the squad. Hooker. Tom Youngs.
Right, okay. So,
oh, God, this was this was one of the most concerning bits for me.
You know, when you're talking, and this is the last time I'm going to mention it. Australia have picked two hookers. England, on the other hand, have said, you can't come, Mr. Dylan Hartley, because of the rules of whatever it is, and we can't carry a player. Turns out they were completely wrong, because they didn't bother reading the rules. Surely, if you're going to lead by example, read the rules first.
What do you mean?
Okay,
what do you mean, read the rules?
Oh, right, okay.
What rules are you talking about?
Yeah. So, Australia have only selected two hookers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
England believe that is against the rules, okay?
No, it's not against the rules.
No,
no, but they believed it was. The only rule is 6 players with front row experience, but that's in your game day squad. Other than that, you can do pretty much what you want. And what they were saying is that they can't take Dylan Hartley along because you've only got limited spaces, so on and so forth.
No, it was nothing to do with rules. They were just saying, if there's an injury at hooker, We won't have
so
a backup.
Why has Mike Catt and co appealed to the IRB to clarify the Australian situation?
Which is
what they've done. Yes,
I've not read anything about that.
They absolutely have, and not only that, they are now saying that they might have considered taking Hartley because actually it doesn't really matter what the balance is in the squad. If a hooker goes down, you just bring the next one in.
No, because the biggest concern about Hartley was that he wouldn't have had a game for 6 months. He wouldn't have been able to play in any of the warm-up. Wouldn't have been able to play against Fiji.
But it certainly seems important now, though, doesn't
it? So Youngs, didn't cover himself in glory. Weber was a bit average last week.
Yeah.
Jamie George.
He missed his first line out.
But then he hit a beautiful back ball.
He was busy around the park.
Yeah, he carried well when he came on.
Good back ball as well.
So is it Mullet hyphen Dickey gone?
Gone. I'd probably get rid of two.
I would also be tempted to get rid of two.
I would get rid of two because now I know the rules, I'll do that. But I think they'll keep three because they've said that they're going to go with three. George then Youngs.
Yeah, Youngs and George are my top two, depending on order. And then Weber.
For now, we'll put a little question mark next to
Weber. Does Weber excite you? When you look at the name Weber?
Not at all.
Do you just look, am I just filling up a squad there for the sake of it?
Not at all. Second row then. Here's possibly the toughest decision. Laws and Launchbury there.
They're still first choice for me.
Atwood's first choice for me.
I like Atwood off the bench.
That's a good point, but I still...
And Parling, if you do have trouble with the line-out, you know where to go.
Do you really need four locks? You could take Easter, and he's a lock back row.
No, because you could also say Laws is a lock back row option.
So, firstly, are we knocking Cruz off? Good, impressive as he's been, we're knocking him off.
I'd knock off Parling.
Parling is a question mark for me.
All right, so we've got Weber and Parling as question marks. Back row, then. What happens here, then?
Okay, do you want to actually...
It's pretty simple, isn't it? We just take Callum Clark out of that.
Why? He played bloody well. I mean, he got a yellow card, but I tell you what, he did a damn sight better around the breakdown than Robshaw and Haskell did.
He did do better on the breakdown.
I've gone on record to talk about Haskell. I don't rate him as highly as you do, JB. I don't rate him as highly as a lot of people do. But
if I'm picking based on the performances, he's not going, unfortunately. And I love Haskell, but no chance.
I think he will be going.
I think he will go. I'm not sure whether he should. His performance at the weekend was not great. His carrying was poor, and he gave away a lot of penalties.
This is the democracy. So we're taking Haskell off.
Robshaw definitely.
Yep.
Wood definitely, in my opinion.
Yep. Yeah, well, he's the vice captain, isn't he? If anything happens to
line out as well.
Well, to Robshaw, Wood's the man.
Yeah, he's the second captain, isn't he?
All right, and we'll come back to Haskell and Clark as well.
Easter.
Vunipola looked so lethargic.
He was getting ball on the back foot, going backwards.
And he's the only carrier.
This is my problem with him. It's not just that he's our only carrier. Carrying is all he does.
No.
His work on the floor is excellent.
Yeah. Okay.
I think he works...
Well, France nullified his carrying, and he just think they should have just used him as a decoy more than they did.
Yes, but I completely agree.
Here's a question. Who else does a carrying in that team other than Vunipola?
Oh, I know. Well, the other Vunipola and Atwood off the bench.
Marla does. Laws does a bit, but he's not great. And Youngs does. Youngs or George.
Because Launchbury's not a great carrier.
No. In my opinion, I would take all three of those back rows.
Vunipola, Morgan, take Easter. And Easter.
I would take Easter.
I'd rather.
What's your thinking behind Easter?
He can cover both positions. He can cover lock and eight. And they played at Saturday the last 20 minutes with Vunipola at six and Easter at eight, which does multiply your carrying options.
Here's my thought with that though: you were talking about how important line out is and set piece ball is.
Yeah.
If it does go without Dylan Hartley at hooker, if it does start to go wrong with Jamie George or Tom Youngs, then Jeff Parling, I just think, could be that important.
Yeah, yeah.
More important than Easter would be as an option.
I would say ditch Easter, take an extra lock, and use Laws as you flip between. Croft's sniffing around as well.
Me and JB are taking Easter out.
Yeah, okay.
I like Easter a lot. I've got a lot of time for Minty.
Did anyone notice that
where did we stand with Parling?
We'll have Parling in. If Easter's out, you've got to have Parling.
Did anyone notice that East was doing a lot of the talking at the end of the game as well?
Yes.
Don't know if you've been reading too much into that, but...
I did.
Right, final decision in the pack before we move on to the backs, then come on, Haskell or Clark? I think we're going to have to lose one of these, aren't we?
Haskell goes. Two things. I think Clark's been really, really good.
Are you judging that on the season? You think Clark's been brilliant, or are you just judging it on last week's match?
No. Clark is a very, very good flanker.
Where is the JB that's just been going on and on about Haskell all season long?
I love Haskell. I genuinely love Haskell, but... push comes to shove. I'm thinking now when it comes down to narrowing the squad.
Hask can start at six, which Clark probably can't do, so I would go for Hask.
You've been outvoted, so Haskell's in, Clark's out. So out of the pack, four names are going. Corbisiero, Mullet-Dickey, Cruz and Clark.
Oh, and Easter. Five names.
And Easter, five names. So we've got to lose three out of this back line. Where do you lose?
Well, let's start
with
the easy one, 36 and go.
Right, all three wingers are in.
Yes, nailed on.
Mike Brown's in.
Yes.
Is he?
Yeah.
I think Goodell's done.
Mike Brown?
Goodle stop.
Are you... He's just trying to be contrary.
Well, okay, so who played the best? I thought Mike Brown didn't play anywhere near as good.
Are you joking? He was the only England player that I think came out of it with any credit.
Uge! Just ran right round him.
It was Uge in full flight.
Yeah, but he had to go off one foot, then the other foot, and round him.
Back in your box, he had a few games.
Okay.
All right, so we know he's going to pick Ford and Farrell.
Yeah, both of those in.
Both of those should be in. How is Billy 12 Trees... We talked about this a few weeks ago. How is he even in the squad? How did he even come onto the pitch in France on Saturday and Carl Eastman was watching it on the telly?
That pass in France's 22 that just went to no one. Just a little pop pass.
He's had a terrible season, and Kyle Eastman's been the form inside centre in the season. It just made me angry.
Whilst you're there, can you get rid of Burgess as well? Let's finally put this force to bed.
We need to get rid of two names out of this.
Burgess.
I personally would get rid of Burgess. As well as he played last week, he is too much of a liability to carry at centre.
I think still he's got more chance of playing in the pack. I mean, yeah. He doesn't literally have more chance of playing in the pack,
right,
but for me he does.
Sippers then. Sippers! He made a big impact when he came on, didn't he?
He did score, but did he make a big impact per se? I mean, as almost
he did get voted man of the match after playing
only
17 minutes. Yes.
Oh wow! I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. But it was. I'll tell you who I think had the biggest impact. I think it's Danny Kerr because he got quick ball. He just sped everything up, and you could argue that that was the forwards giving him quicker ball, but. Youngs has this tendency to pick up and look for options and crab across the field. And occasionally it goes well, but it did not go well in that game. Danny Kerr was, for me, the man who made the biggest impact.
So we got all our scrum halves. Youngs, Kerr, Wiggy, there, Wigglesworth, they're through. Ford, Farrell, Slade makes it.
Definitely for me. Definitely.
So the decision you've got one player needs to be lost out of Danny Cipriani,
five,
Sam Burgess, seven, or Andy Goode.
Andy Goode, gone. Alex Goode, staying. right.
No, hold on, how many names? We need two of those.
Let me just throw something out there.
One, two, three, four,
okay,
five,
now, I don't know
six,
what kind of injury
seven,
Barrett...
Yeah, we need two of them.
Two of them have to go.
I don't know what injury Barrett is carrying, but is there a chance that Burgess is going to sneak through because of Barrett's kind of unfortunate situation?
So Lancaster said that Barrett, he hopes that Barrett will return to training this week, but that is not a definite. And if Barrett's injury is worse, then we could see Burgess in or Barrett. But my first choice would be Barrett, then Burgess goes home.
Word.
And I would personally have Sippers in the squad as my second choice 15 and Goode out. Because Sippers offers something completely different. You can have him on your bench covering 10, 15.
This is controversial. So Burgess goes.
Yeah.
36 is gone. I think Goode's going to start. And I think Sippers forces his way in.
You're saying you drop Mike Brown from the squad?
Are you mental?
Just bear with me.
He's just trying to
the Six
contrary.
Nations player, the player of the
just
player
bear
of the tournament.
With me. I thought Goode played better.
Okay.
I thought Brown had a few holes in his game on the weekend.
I don't even want to waste good podcast time on this.
No.
This is ridiculous.
We've got a lot of good stuff to get through.
Yeah,
this is ridiculous.
So we don't need to talk about this. It's just ridiculous.
Hang on. What's the point of me being here?
You've said your piece.
No, I've not finished yet. And the and the last part, it just worries me in the same way it worries me about North. What if he gets a knock early doors and then has to go home? That's my big worry.
He has had 6 months out. He's passed concussion protocol long ago. He is, that's for all intents and purposes, absolutely fine.
Mm-hmm. And that's like saying, what happens if Haskell wants to launch another business product into the market during the World Cup? He might be distracted with a new set of kettlebells.
If you don't think he isn't going to launch every product under the sun during the World Cup.
So, I would drop Goode and have Sippers.
What do you say, JB? Goode or Sippers?
Brown. No way is Goode not going.
Goode goes home.
Goode's just done too many good things in an England shirt recently.
He's had one good game. His last starting game was against Ireland when he was pretty, pretty, pretty poor.
Yeah.
Not just because he came on. I've watched him a lot playing for Sale, and Sippers goes to the World Cup.
Yes.
Goode goes home and watches it on the
telly.
Can
the police still scupper his chances of going?
No. He's been
November.
Bailed until November.
Smart.
Yeah. He's still not been charged with anything.
Look at our 31-man England squad.
You missed the wild card as well.
What's that?
Croft.
Croft, Foden,
sniffing around.
Pennell was training with the squad last week. Yeah,
Croft is sniffing around.
If Croft was fit, I would probably quite happily ditch Haskell for Croft.
I think most people would
if he was fit.
If he was fit and had a sustained, he doesn't need to sustain
anything though, does he?
Oh, he's such an athlete.
He just shows up for Lions tours.
Turns up for his bag of stash at Alliance. Yeah. On the Alliance tour.
Which bag's mine? You weren't picked. Which bag's mine?
Before we depart from the England situation and talk about other things, Phil, you want to talk about something that Neil Back has raised in the aftermath of the match?
It wasn't actually the aftermath of the match. It was before the match.
Really?
Yeah.
I
think it was Thursday last week.
Plot thickens.
Where Neil Back was being interviewed. I think they're interviewing everyone who's English who's won a World Cup, to try and get little sound bites.
I haven't heard anything from Mark Regan yet.
You will do, Tim. You will do. Don't worry. And he said that he doesn't believe that Chris Robshaw is in the top five open sides in the world.
Okay.
And that obviously asks the question, well, who is? Given that England they've just moved down to the fifth ranked team in the world, so by logic you'd assume that the starting five open sides for the top five teams would be the top five in the world.
Well, unless one team has got... Okay, well, there's two better sevens in Wales and there's two better sevens in Australia, right? I mean, this isn't me.
Who do you rank number 1-7 in the world?
Well, let's just go with McCaw, because you can just say McCaw. Yep.
McCaw is number one. I think everyone would agree with that?
Yeah.
Hooper.
Hoops at two.
Yeah, I'd go with that.
Francois Lowe?
Yes, I probably would
say he's ahead of them.
Pocock.
I would say Pocock.
How about Sean O'Brien? Yep. How about Sam Warburton?
Sam Warburton, Robshaw is a close run thing, in my opinion.
I agree. That's where it gets quite more tricky to pick.
I tell you where it is tricky.
What about Doucetoir?
Doucetoir is a very good player. Here's where it gets really tricky for Robshaw. Tipperick or Robshaw?
I would have Robshaw.
I'd have Robshaw.
Well, Tipperick's arguably the best link player in the world.
He's behind McCaw, Hooper, Pocock,
Francois Lowe.
Doucetoir.
Sean O'Brien. Warburton.
Warburton.
Stefan Armitage is an interesting one.
Yeah.
100% Stefan Armitage.
What about, he's not really the typical seven mould, but he frequently plays seven, Mamuka Gorgodza.
Who would you pick? Okay, you've got to win the World Cup. Who do you want?
So what we're actually saying is that Chris Robshaw is in danger of not being in the top 10 open sides in the world.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, Mamuka Gorgodza is exactly the sort of player that Stuart Lancaster wouldn't play, because he'll show up to Penny Hill Park and he'd be eating his dog or something. So it just shows culture isn't everything.
A lot of those guys are traditional seven moulded player. Well, no, I say a lot of them.
McCaw's not.
McCaw's everything. Francois Lowe does everything. Doucetoir just tackles everything. Robshaw is more of a 6.5. He has a bit more all round to his game, but his turnover work isn't quite as good.
Is Robshaw in the top 5 6.5s in the world? Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. But he's not in top five sevens.
Have England got any players in the top five in their position?
Marla.
Yeah, Marlon may be the best in the world at what he does.
Courtney Laws, perhaps?
I think Laws, certainly name
don't know.
Deserves a mention.
Marla, Courtney Laws, and Mike Brown.
Jonathan Joseph as an outside centre?
Could be getting there. Close.
So you've got Conrad Smith.
Fekitoa
might even be better than Jonathan Joseph.
Yeah.
Kurindrani?
Definitely. Bastereau.
I think I always get laughed at when I say I think Bastereau is probably the best outside centre that there is. Because just think about how good he must be to look like that, behave like that, but then just win everything and give the best team in the world in Toulon front football.
He's kept quite quiet.
Yeah.
France's strength on Saturday wasn't their running game.
No.
It was their control and their
pack. But we should talk about Ujay. As JB's named him, the slipperiest man
on earth.
Although there is a little bit of me that every single time I see him doing anything good, just makes my blood boil a little bit that he shouldn't be on a pitch.
Do you know what?
And shouldn't be on a pitch without a stamp.
I'm starting to like him more and more now, particularly after the stamp.
Because,
what? Well, because he's such a bad guy, and I can't help but just root for him. It feels like I'm watching a WWE heel.
He looks a bit like Razor Ramon.
Did you see?
I'm pretty sure next week he'll be playing with like a toothpick.
Did you see when he glided in for that try and he slid over? Do you see what he did as he put?
Did he just carry on sliding because there's no friction underneath his belly?
He slid for a long way, a suspiciously long way, but then got up onto his knees and blew a kiss to the crowd.
Yes!
Lovely.
I love him. I absolutely love him. And the way that he stepped around, he's very nasty stamping on people's faces. But, you know, if it was 10, 15 years ago, it was all the rage.
Oh, you're so offensively insincere when you say that,
Jay. Oh, bless him. Oh.
He's such a good player, though. Well, Uge running off Michalak, who I thought was done. I thought he was absolutely done. And as Phil said before, first game of international rugby is 2002.
Yes.
Isn't that incredible? He's basically the same sort of peer group as Johnny Wilkinson.
He's also now France's all-time record point scorer.
Wow.
And he's got the longest international career for a French player.
Is that right?
Fact.
As in, over the years?
Yeah.
Wow. That's that is a great fact.
Two great facts, Tim.
Two great facts. Mm-hmm. Sorry, let me give you a double fact.
Fact.
Thank you.
Right. I think we've talked enough about England. I want to move on. I'm glad for a week off from England, and I hope it's a different England. Although, before we depart, because we're going to talk about Stash in a little while, but I mentioned this last week, and it was even more pronounced this week. There's something going on with the cut and the fit of the England shirt, where it sort of puffs up around the neck, makes them look like they have massive traps.
Yeah.
And the sort of the sleeve sort of rides up a little bit, and it puffs up. It looks like they've all got pads on.
That collar. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
But I do like those little sleeves.
Oh, yes, we were talking about this, the NFL sleeve.
Yeah, on some players it was. Yeah. Like Marla, over those big arms.
I'm a big, big fan of it.
Oh, I've got a brilliant thing of Marla. I think we should break up. This is Marla giving a masterclass on the dark arts of the scrum or not. Joe Marler makes it sound a lot more simple than it is.
Surely born into the front row. 6 feet tall and weighing in at over 17 stone, he's spent
more
the last
than that.
Few years learning his trade at the coalface of the scrum. And he's agreed to share some of the secrets of that twilight zone with us.
Right, so this is Joe Marler getting technical and getting deep on the dark arts and the technicalities of the scrum. So have you got your pen and paper? Are you taking notes, JB?
Ready?
Still gets very dark and best way to describe it, very dark and difficult. Yeah, it's a very dark place, and people talk about the dark arts and stuff like that, but there's not really any of that going on. It's about pushing, and whoever can push the hardest, you know, comes out on top. So.
There you go.
Stop. Is it dark arts that he's referring to?
Yeah, well, no, I think he's just saying it goes dark because, like, we all scrummage and our heads are in and you can see the shadows on the ground of our body just pushing in it.
But it's
just
all
a bit of pushing. It's like pushing hard.
I've said this for years. Propping is basically about pushing.
It's about pushing in it.
Pushing hard.
Have you ever seen the French scrummaging machine?
No.
You told me about it. The mechanical one.
Yeah, it's a mechanical one. It's made by the same people that make the French Air Force jets. And it is amazing. And it replicates the opposite team that they're about to play against.
Oh, wow. That's like Manchester City at their training ground have about three different training pitches that they, before an away game, the week before, they will cut. They will line the pitches so the dimensions are exactly the same as the opponent's team. And
that's amazing.
They cut the grass and they re-turf to make the turf exactly the same as the opponents they're going to play.
That's wow. Incredible.
Yeah, that's the attention to detail there. Right, I reckon we've been talking about this England squad. Phil, you've sort of got a little roundup of some of the surprises from the other squad announcements that have already happened.
Yes, I have. I've been doing a little review. A few key points from... I've got five here that have been announced in the past week. So, Australia. No huge surprises on the people that are in. Gitto and Mitchell are in. But out, White... Nick White, who was superb and we all thought was going to be in, and Horwill. And then the surprise in the Australia squad is the balance of it. They've only got two hookers, two scrum halves. They've only got one specialist 13 and one specialist 15.
Yep.
But they've got five specialist wingers. They've got people like Adam Ashley Cooper, Rob Horn, who can play Henry Speight, Joe Tamani, Drew Mitchell.
Well, it's what we talked about before. The Australians kind of, it's in their game, they have inside backs and outside backs. They don't have wingers, centres, all the rest of it like we do.
Yeah. So that's really the kind of the surprise.
I think it just stands to reason that selecting only one guy that can kick sticks and selecting a maverick 10, that's this the formula of winning World Cups. That's what we've learned from
exactly
all the years of World
right.
Cups, isn't it?
Then Fiji's squad was announced. No real surprise about people are out. Seremai Bai, who's 36 at Leicester, he's out. And then there's a few English players who were in: Tikrituma, Gonova, Bath's Matawalu, Nemanja Nadolo of the Crusaders, who was at Exeter Chiefs for a couple of games a few years ago, who weighs 19 stone 10 as a winger / centre, and Leone Nakarawa, the Glasgow lock, who is in superb form based on his performances last season and the Pacific Nations Cup is in.
We've got Argentina, France and Italy.
Yeah.
Any sort of big name omissions, or is it all pretty much as expected?
Argentina's fairly routine. Sacchino of Newcastle is a surprise entry, who just got...
He played very well,
In the Rugby Championship,
It was at Rotherham a couple of years ago. It's
crazy. I think Newcastle needed a lot of credit. They seem to have signed very intelligently and kept some of their own. So
They signed him...
I think it was Rotherham.
Was it Nottingham?
No, I think you're right.
He was at Nottingham before that.
Was he?
Or he was at Rotherham, then Nottingham. Anyway, he was in the Championship. That was it.
Italy have announced their squad. Bortolami and Barbieri out.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, wow.
Not huge surprise. Bortolami's 35-36. Former captain, over 100 caps, but probably past his best. And Mauro Bergamasco, the flanker / scrum half, is in. And then France, the two big surprises. Tranduc is out, who did play very well. Mm. And the cutest man in rugby.
Chucky and Weenie might play in the front row for France.
Chucky's out.
Yeah, I know. But as far as JB's
concerned, Chucky is a name as cute as Uge is when he's stamping on other players' faces.
Uge's bad. He's a bad man.
He is a bad man. And the French, the kind of surprise in the balance is they've picked four recognised scrum halves, albeit Michelac is really considered as a 10, and Cocker and Para can kind of play a bit of 10 as well.
Yeah, they can actually.
So that's the roundup of those.
Interesting. Right. So Stuart Lancaster names his squad on Thursday. That may well have already happened by the time you're listening to this podcast, and you may well be laughing your head off at some of our suggestions about what the squad should look like. But let us know what you think at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. Now I'm going to go back to you, Phil, because you have prepared a little bit of a quiz for us.
I have, Tim.
So what is this? Get your pens and paper out the ready and ready to join in.
Pens and paper. Now, we're still a little bit off from the Premiership, but I thought I would test your Premiership knowledge of squad players, squad depth.
Oh, it's going to be a walk in the park.
Oh, I'm not feeling happy about this.
So I've listed quite a few players, not a huge number, but quite a few players who have played a good number of games last season. Most around the 10-12 mark. So played half of their club's games in the Premiership last season. I'm just going to give you the name, and I want you to tell me which club they are from.
This is very exciting.
Okay, wow.
1 point for each.
All right.
So we'll start off very easy. David Cissé.
Do you want to know the club where he's moving to as well? An extra point.
I'll
put it in there.
No extra point. just the club he played for last season.
Bath moving to London Irish.
Bath. You're going back to London Irish, upgrading your point as well.
That's right. That's right. So he's on loan to London Irish last time. Or was he? I don't know.
So 1 point all.
Yeah.
Number two, Will Collier. Another easy one.
Yep. Jay, come on, lean answer now. Come on.
Right then, Harlequins.
Harlequins.
Correct.
Do you want me to write it down or just shout it out? I'll write it down.
Well, I'll write it down and you say your name because then I can prove my working.
Number three.
Yeah.
Alex Rogers.
Ooh.
He played 12 games last season. Jay, you going to shout it out?
I'm going to go with Exeter.
I've gone Newcastle, but I don't know.
Newcastle is correct.
Yes.
He's a Newcastle prop.
How many of these have we got? Can we quit there? Stop there, yeah?
Okay. Byron McGuigan.
Crikey.
He played 11 times last season.
Okay. London Irish.
And I've gone Newcastle again.
No points for anyone. Exeter.
Who's the McGuigan that's at Newcastle? There's a hooker there.
There is McGuigan. A hooker.
Yeah.
It might be Barry. No, is it Barry McGuigan?
No, isn't the boxer.
Not Barry McGuigan.
Barry McGuigan. Northern Irish boxer. Go on. Okay. That's a terrible accent to our Northern Irish listeners. I apologise to all the Ulstermen listening. Go on.
Okay, R.C. Tuala.
I'm having a nightmare. I have no idea.
Say his first name again.
R.C. Spell A-H-S-E-E. Mm. Not that that will help you. Jay, have you got someone?
Yeah, London Welsh.
I've written down London Welsh.
No, Northampton Saints.
Oh, it's a winger.
Alfie Tuala was at London Welsh.
Winger, fullback.
I did know him.
He played a lot towards the end of the season.
He did. He's quite good as well.
He was very good.
Came on with George North.
I think he might be in the Samoa squad as well.
Damn it!
Okay, another easy one. Billy Meeks.
Okay.
Gloucester.
Correct.
Yeah.
He's stacked, by the way.
Still 4-3. 4-3, still a point up.
Three more.
All right, come on. Let's rattle for him then.
Owen Griffin.
Crikey.
He played 12 games last season in the Premiership.
Yeah. I don't know. Total guess this one.
Okay, Jay.
No idea.
Good game's a quick game.
I'm going to go with Wasps.
London Irish.
London Irish is correct.
Oh! Yeah.
5-3.
I know London Irish. I thought if it's London Irish, you definitely know him and you'd be more confident.
That's why I went.
I could tell.
I'm not sure.
Because you wrote it down very, very quickly, Tim.
And then started going, oh, I'm not sure.
Right, okay, two more.
Yeah.
Two more. So, Jay, it's 5-3. Jay needs to get both of these.
And hope that I don't get one.
James Cannon.
Oh, God damn it.
Come on, Jay.
The Wasps again. Don't know.
Wasps.
Wasps is correct.
An unassailable 6-4 lead.
Oh, God.
With one to go, and that one is Cameron Neild, who played 8 times. This particular club.
What's his name again?
Cameron Neild.
Tigers?
Sail Sharks.
Sail Sharks is correct.
Never heard of him. Oh, dear.
So
that was 7, a disaster.
7-4 to Tim.
That was a disaster. I thought I was...
Back to where you know and expect JB to be when it comes to a quiz. Ah, that was better.
Very good, Tim. Very good.
Right. A bumper edition of Stash Watch now. I'm going to let this music play for a little bit longer and just let JB...
Just devastated.
Yeah. So at Rugby Podcast, you can find us on Twitter. And there's been loads of pictures back and forth. And what I love is that every single time there's a new kit launched, we get a massive number of people tweeting to Rugby Podcast, and we really appreciate these, letting us and showing us and naming and shaming those people that don't wear the boots in the promotional kit shots and those people that do wear. And I'm happy to report there is a massive number of people that have been wearing boots. And I genuinely put this down to us.
Yeah.
And I put this down to collectively and with your support on Twitter and by listening to the podcast. And I mean, we know for a fact that Canterbury made sure their players at the England kit launch had boots on, and they said, we've done that, and they did the same with other people they make. But it's not happening nearly as much as it used to. And I genuinely put that down to the influence of our little campaign. So thank you for getting behind it.
Yeah, well, kit makers want to sell kits and they look rubbish with trainers. That's what it comes down to.
They do. So let's get into a Stash Watch then. Stash! I'm going to talk about, I mean, it's been a painful podcast to talk about the England match. It's also a painful podcast. It's got to be a painful podcast, Jay, to talk about Exeter Chiefs.
Yeah.
What are they doing? That orange and black garish number. I mean, I don't know if there's a single Exeter Chiefs fan that would come out and defend that. We used to talk about a golden age of Stash. Are we going into a horrible... Oh, it's just... We've had a lot of bad kits.
It's awful, isn't it? It looks like the sort of kit you would come up with if you're in charge of a sevens team and you were under 18. You know, the more intricate, the better. And
Maybe they ran a competition to, you know, with under eights to design a kit.
I'd say they ran a kit competition with a gaggle of tribal leaders from somewhere. Because they've got to be very careful, Exeter. I mean, they already have the chief, and obviously that's a doff of the cap to the Native American population around Exeter. But then to go ahead and then go through all this tribal marking, just don't do it, boys. There must be a more traditional kit look which you can go for.
Right. Now, they have got their... They released a black one as well this week that is a lot more traditional.
Yeah.
It's quite nice.
Is it a European shirt or something?
The multicoloured one, I think it... Yeah. Or their European Champion Cup fixtures.
Oh, I feel a bit better about that.
Is the European Champions Cup just going to be a dumping ground for the worst kits on earth?
potentially. Yeah. Right, let's
look at that home one.
That's nice.
That home one is really nice.
Yeah.
All right. I feel better about that. Leinster. Let's go across the Irish Sea to Leinster. The Dubliners and their kit. Now, it's got a like herringbone type get up where it's got little lines going down on the belly part, which I just think is all kinds of unflattering. Even for ripped men like Jamie Heaslip, suddenly looks like he's got love handles and he hasn't.
Making the Leinster kit is one of the easiest jobs in world rugby. You make it blue and you incorporate some white, and sometimes you put in some yellow. You don't need any patterns, you don't need anything else. This isn't too bad for me.
I like it.
It's okay. I mean, it's okay.
It's okay.
I think Martin Moore won't be too happy with it, and Mike Ross, but everyone else should be.
I like the white detailing at the top. I love the fact that they've got the badge.
And the three stars.
And that's all white, and it's all very neat and comes together. But then why add that little faded bit? Like... Do you know when you're coming from like a 60 to a 30 and you get those little lines? I don't really see it. Leinster slow down, I guess.
Let's talk about Wasps. We're going to rattle through these. There's so many. Wasps.
Don't like it.
I don't like it at
all.
So to describe it, if you haven't seen it, it's all black except it's got...
The yellow bits?
It's made by Under Armour with some strange yellow bits. One like V going down from the neck to the middle
it's
of the
not
chest.
A V.
It looks like... Look at that.
No, it's an ice cream cone.
It is an ice cream cone,
but it looks like a couple of things. Look, when you look at the whole shirt, and why is Land Rover on there twice?
Yes, that is spotted.
It is so unnecessary to have two Land Rovers.
By the way, how much nicer would it be if they just had, I don't know, hoops?
But look at that. Look at that. That looks like the whole shirt looks like a face, with that Land Rover being the mouth, the wasp from the other Land Rover being the eyes, and this thing being the nose.
Yeah, so, I can see that.
And also, when Christian Wade and the other players were in the promotional shots, they just looked like they were wearing a bikini, which just really bothered me.
None of us have ever been in a design team, so, you know, maybe Tim has.
More's the pity.
Yeah. If your brief was Wasp, what would you go with? Would you go with horizontal stripes or a single vertical stripe to the head?
Look, I'm going to rattle through these, because for me it gets, I think, possibly worse with Bayon. I mean,
Kappa.
You
don't see many Kappa kits.
I don't mind that.
And I don't like that.
No, I don't like that.
I don't like that. Untraditional colours for Cardiff Blues for their alternate kit.
Now, this is...
But a traditional type of kit, and it just looks good.
Do you know what that is? Do you know why that exists?
Why?
It's is it not for Owen Williams?
Oh, it is.
I think that's why they've...
The European shirt stays strong for O's.
Yes.
Yeah, you're right. Right, if you really want to, like, bring your lunch back up, maybe going for a little bit of part-time bulimia, then just look at the Connacht kit for the new season.
Oh my God! Oh.
Lifestyle sport.
It's a terrible sponsor. It's a terrible design. There's lines going in all kinds of different
directions. What is a lifestyle sport? Like gardening?
Look, it looks like an OS relief map, some mountains or something.
Topography map.
Why have they done that?
Thank you, Phil, for the terminology. It's all kinds of wrong.
Have we done Edinburgh?
Oh, Edinburgh and Glasgow. Oh.
Edinburgh, right. Crusaders.
A few
years ago had a red and black chainmail kit. They're Crusaders, so I can kind of understand the link. Edinburgh Rugby.
Yeah, didn't they used to be called the Gunners or something?
Reavers.
No, that Border Reavers.
Border Reavers.
Border Reavers, yes.
Yeah, so here's...
They have got a castle on their badge.
Yeah, so
I can kind of see the link.
Here's my ruling on that. Have chainmail all you want, but make sure it's real. I think they should all be forced to wear several kilograms of chainmail.
I think you'll find it's contrary to the laws of the game.
Maybe.
No, definitely.
They made their bed, they shall lie in it.
There is a specific law about the density of the fabric that your kit can be made from. So I'm pretty sure that chainmail would contravene that.
And the only thing I'm going to do, just to make us all feel a little bit better, is just show you a picture of that France kit. The alternate kit.
That's so good. That's so good.
So beautiful. I just want to be alone with that shirt.
It's lovely. It's so nice.
Yeah. So, do you think this spate of late releases of shirts, just because they run out of ideas, they run out of time, throw something together, let's move on?
I don't believe we're the only people sat here going, look at that, that's a beautiful shirt by France. Look at that hideous shirt by Connor Orr.
Well, the Leicester Tigers is going to be a classic, right? Leicester Tigers is going to be a classic example of looking back and thinking, hang on, why did they do that? It's aged terribly.
A couple of other new ones that we've not mentioned.
Oh, have we? Go on.
Glasgow, the camouflage.
Oh my God.
Is it like snow camo? Like white, blue, dark?
White, black and red.
It's a red one, isn't it?
Oh, there's red in it, yeah.
So I don't know what you're hiding from with that. Unless it's like the zebra theory, which is zebras are black and white, not because they blend into the background, because when they're together, they blend in.
It's hard to pick one from another.
Exactly. Ah. So it might just be a massive Glaswegians coming towards your line. that's the only thing I can think of. Ospreys as well have got a kit out.
Oh, yes, they have.
Now, as you well know, ospreys are black and red. Where does the red come from? Yeah. I mean... from what I know, there are no large sea fish-eating birds in Swansea, so I don't know why they're called the ospreys to start with. But if you're going to go with that and you're going to buy into that premise, why not go black and white? Mm. It's meant to be Neath, it's meant to be Swansea. And where's the red come from? Lost. Absolutely lost on that.
Maybe there's something we don't know. Maybe they're shutting down Scarlets and it's going to amalgamate that province as well, or whatever it's called, not province.
Province, region, whatever.
Region, yeah, whatever. Anyway, a big old stash watch, and I think generally speaking, but for a few exceptions, it's been a bad, bad summer for stash.
Yes.
With a few exceptions.
On the whole. Probably one of the worst in living memory.
Just salvaged slightly by, as we say, France, England to a lesser extent, and Argentina's...
home and away.
Argentina's commemorative show.
And also, you can't have more than two things on your chest. Has Phil seen the Jamie Cudmore video yet?
Have you seen the Jamie Cudmore video, Phil?
Oh, yes.
He defeats CrossFit.
Have I seen the Jamie Cudmore video?
So describe the Jamie Cudmore video, Phil, as you just imagine pitching a tent up on a mountainside with Jamie, cooking over an open fire that he made by rubbing two sticks together. Not the two sticks you'd like to be rubbing together with Jamie Cudmore.
Oh,
but...
Tim.
Go on.
So it's very, very lowbrow, Tim.
It's very lowbrow.
What's the Jamie Cudmore video?
It's Jamie Cudmore basically swinging on a climbing frame. Which, if it was...
Is that like a skyscraper?
He's swinging through, like, downtown New York, smashing through buildings. It's like King Kong, like the original King Kong.
His fitness instructor said he's defeated...
CrossFit.
Defeated CrossFit, which is like saying I completed Tinder or something.
There are some people in the gym I go to that do some ridiculous things on those CrossFit bars. Just like doing pull-ups. And then...
Muscle-ups?
Well, muscle-ups is amazing. But just the thing where that you have bars going... Imagine you're hanging onto a bar, mm-hmm. and above your head and higher up, there's another bar.
And you
like
jump.
Steps. They pull up and jump and grab and catch onto the next one up and do that about half
Hang
a dozen
on.
Times.
Can't you do that?
No, I cannot. Can you?
Obviously, no. I can do one pull-up, I think.
Yeah.
I bet Phil could do it.
Probably not at the moment, shoulder post-shoulder surgery. Maybe someday. But the Jamie Cudmore thing.
Yeah.
It's very impressive just if you think of it from an average man. But then you realise he weighs almost 19 stone. And then most of it is a picture of him side on where he looks big. But the last 3 seconds he walks towards the camera with his shirt off. Oh, my God, he is gigantic.
Do you think it's scarier him running towards you than... what's his name? All Black Six.
Jerome Kano.
Jerome Kano, who's terrifying.
I think Jerome Kano probably goes a little bit faster than Jamie Cudmore.
Hits harder.
Yeah. It's impressive video, though.
Oh, I'll tell you what's not an impressive video, and I don't think it will get released out into the public domain, but my brother had a shoulder operation last week, and he showed me a video of the specialist while he was under anaesthetic. The specialist took a video of just dislocating his shoulder number of times, just holding his wrist and just popping his shoulder in and out. It's horrible.
Why did you do it multiple times? Surely he's done once, no?
No, just, you know, that's what I mean. Your missus is, both your missuses are working, you know, with
girls,
people that are under.
Girls.
You know, Layla would anaesthetise someone, then they have a bit of fun, don't they? Have a little peek down the shorts, and
I'd be disappointed if they didn't.
Anyway, how do we move on from that?
Any rugby this weekend?
Well, we've not yet talked about the Scotland performance.
I don't know anything about it, except for, was there a drop goal in it or something?
They scored a last-minute try. It was all penalties. Pygos scored a last-minute try to scrape a victory from the jaws of defeat, to break an 8-month losing streak as well.
Brilliant.
To tie in with Scotland briefly, and we were just talking about kits, have a look at the Scotland training shirt. It's the same as the Glasgow camouflage shirt, but in Scotland colours.
Do you know why? One of the most disappointing years of my life was when Bath started playing in camouflage. No, warming up in camouflage. Terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Because you couldn't watch them warm up?
No, you couldn't see them.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
It's tough, isn't it?
It was awful. I don't know. When I was a kid, I always thought that camouflage kits, why don't people do more camouflage kits? And now I'm an adult, I understand exactly why people don't do camouflage kits. Mm.
It's the same as, like, you know, there are people that go, I know, I'll get up today, what shall I put, or what shall I wear? I know, I'll wear my camouflage trousers to go into town for a bit of a stroll about town.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Urban combat.
No. Well, I suppose fishermen do the same thing, but there's a little bit of principle, there's a little bit of thought behind that, so the fishermen see you. Fishermen will always wear camo.
Oh, the ones by the pond.
The ones by the...
Yeah, they are.
By the lake.
Yeah. It's quite funny, isn't it? Because they're wearing camouflage, but they'll be listening to a radio and drinking cans of Stella and smoking at the same time. So I do wonder how effective that is.
Right. But in terms of matches this weekend... did you watch Scotland?
I didn't have... I've not seen the highlights anywhere, fortunately, based on what I've read, because apparently it was a dreadful game.
I concur with everything Phil's just said.
But they finally broke the jinx. They've won a game.
Mm.
Next stop, the quarterfinal of the World Cup.
World Cup final, I guess. Now
we're supporting Scotland all the way to the World Cup quarterfinals. Hey,
yes.
Here's a little fact for you. Talking about rugby matches this weekend, and there are a few. Ireland play Wales.
This will be interesting.
Yep. Scotland play Italy, so it's the reversal of the fixtures. But before all of that, the top 14 starts on Friday night.
No, it doesn't.
Fact. Well, no, it doesn't. It started last Friday.
What?
It's already started.
Fact. This top 14 is crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just to the point of it just being not on, really.
It isn't really on, is it?
No. I mean, they should.
The top 14's already started.
Yeah. Full round of fixtures.
There's got to be a more... There's got to be a better way to run this, isn't there?
It's only just finished.
Yeah. Because it finished late.
Oh,
and
God.
They've started... Already.
All that money you get in France is starting to... The chickens are coming home to roost, aren't they?
The cocks.
The cocks are coming home to roost.
The cocks. Why don't they separate out into two conferences and you can, you know, have some sort of format, or... They've done it with the pro Super 15s or whatever it is now. Why not just come up with something a little bit more inventive than grinding your players into the ground?
The meat grinder.
Ireland v Wales. Come on then, Jay.
I have no idea. I really don't know. I mean, not only do I not know, I know I don't know, because I was thinking about England last week, thinking they look the most tournament-ready side, and they get spanked. I thought Wales would all come out firing because they'd be fighting for places, and they got spanked. I simply don't know.
I think it's too hard to call until we know the squads. Until you know the starting team, because Ireland have not played... Well, Wales only had one game and they played very much a second team. Ireland have had two games and they've not really played many first... They've played a handful in each.
Yeah, and the rumours are they're going to bring out the big guns.
Well, good. And see, this is what... There's a little bit of this whole warm-up, picking players kind of thing. There's a little part of me that goes, no, the World Cup warm-up games aren't about giving everyone game time so that you can then give everyone a chance to earn their place in the squad. The World Cup warm-ups are about preparing for a World Cup. So it's almost better, and I quite like how some of the other countries have done it, where you get the impression it's like, I know where my 31 is. Maybe I've got one or two decisions to make, so I'm going to make sure those 31 guys are completely ready for a World Cup. And as we've been talking about, and I know it's partly enforced due to injury, England's starting centre partnership in a World Cup, and the whole back line as a whole, and the whole pack, but the whole back line certainly may not have played before the first World Cup match. And that bothers me.
Yeah, because they're going to be undercooked and all the rest of it. But here's a theory which I've had, and this is me getting a little bit soft inside. Because of the nature of all these warm-ups, and you might disagree or agree here, I've got a feeling that this World Cup is going to be the highest standard of rugby ever played in history. Simply for this reason, that I can't remember a time where so many international teams have had so much time together with so much money being put into their prep.
Yeah.
I genuinely think it's going to be the collection of the best games the highest standard of games ever seen.
It brings a question that over attack versus defence. Is this, the improvements that this period of time has given them, has it had more effect on the attack or the defence? Because if their defence has improved at a faster rate than their attack, then we're going to see some dull attritional games.
Well,
aren't we?
Because really good defensive teams turn balls over. And then that's exciting again.
Well, yeah, but look at every World Cup there's ever been. You tell me a World Cup final where one team cut loose and showed their attacking prowess was the winning factor.
That could be pressure, but I mean, tell you what, when England won it, that was a hell of a World Cup final. In fact, when England lost it, it was a hell of a World Cup final. Because they were really, really chasing.
No, it wasn't a hell of a... 1991 was not a hell of a World Cup
final.
No, 2007.
Oh, 2007.
Because they brought on Matthew Tate and he nearly went over.
Quato try in the corner.
There are almost moments, but I don't think you'd hold up a single World Cup final and go...
You wouldn't hold up the last one.
You go great because it was the tension involved. But you don't go great in terms of, like, what a fantastic game.
Big game fishing, Tim. Mm. I've said it before.
No, I get you. I get what you're saying.
I'll give you an example of defence just dominating situation. Wales, Ireland, and was it 7 minutes of defence? Some of the most enjoyable rugby you'll ever see.
Oh, no, I get that.
That was brilliant. Just going back, Tim, to the what we think, assuming everyone is fit, will be the starting England centre partnership of Barrett and Joseph. They've never actually started a game together.
What?
Yeah, I did say that.
Fact.
In this podcast?
Yes, in this very podcast.
Did you?
I don't think they've ever played together.
Well, I can tell you they haven't.
Mm, okay.
You are right, Jay.
And compare that to, you know, Mar Nonu and Conrad Smith. Off you go, boys.
Well, if those two stop, I reckon it'll be Sonny Bill and Mar Nonu.
Well, yeah, either way, they've all played together.
Yeah.
Jesus, it's just no comparison. Right. Final thing on the agenda for today, and we'll rattle through this one. Philip, you have been working on the best Gloucester team of all time in the professional area. That's a little caveat. So in the professional area, we're going down each of the Premiership teams and picking the best people to have worn that shirt in the professional era. It's the turn of Gloucester today. Here we go, Gloucester. Who wore it best, Phil?
And Gloucester at the moment, their pack isn't very good. But historically, they've had some awesome, awesome Type 5 players. The Shed faithful must be a bit frustrated at this. So this pack is pretty, pretty good.
Pretty good.
Have you been watching Curb Your Enthusiasm a bit recently?
I've not. No,
pretty,
not
for a, pretty.
Not for a few years. So
I've got a front row written down. I'm going to see if it's the same as yours.
Well, two World Cup winning props.
Yeah.
In Woodman and Vickery.
Okay. Yeah.
With Olivier
Azam.
Azam.
Mm. That, I wrote down that front row. And wow.
But some of the some of the props in particular that you're overlooking. Greg Somerville, Carlos Nieto.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
And Rodrigo Roncero, who was one of the all-time best scrummaging tight ends.
So Nieto came in to replace Vickery because they basically gave up on him, I think.
It was about 2008.
I think so, yeah. So they shipped him off to Wasps and then he won a couple of Highland Cups.
Oh, yeah, yeah, it was before that, wasn't it? Before 2008. Anyway, second row, I've gone for, mentioned earlier on the pod, Marco Bortolami.
Nice.
And Ian Jones.
Interesting.
All black
Ian Jones.
How long was he there for?
He was there for a couple of seasons, three seasons, back in 98, 99, 2000, 2001. Just look at him. He's, if you read the list of best All Blacks of all time, he repeatedly makes that list.
Wow.
79 All Black caps.
Well, can I chuck Alex Brown in as a potential shout for a
exactly
second
where
row
I was going
to
go.
Yeah.
You mentioned before, Bortolami as well, was club captain for about 3 years.
Yeah, club captain
so
for a while.
Proper servant, yeah. And actually pretty good.
Great front five, that is. That is absolutely really, like, superb.
International quality, and on the bench as well.
Wow.
Back row.
Yeah.
Now, a bit of help with this.
Kvesic, no.
Now, for me, Akapusi Kwera
has to be
100%.
He's captain in Fiji in the World Cup. He was repeatedly nominated for Guinness Premiership Player of the Season and
Toulouse now?
Repeatedly in the team. He went to Toulouse for a few years. He's now at Montpellier.
Oh, is he? Mm. Do you remember Satala, who came after him?
Yeah.
He was a very, very good player, but I don't know if he was quite...
Not as good as...
Nowhere near as good.
Because Quare could play 6, 7 and 8
and
as well.
And he smashed people.
Yeah, so maybe you might want to put him at 6, depending on who you pick your team. So who else are your contenders?
Who else would you have? So, James Forrester, superb.
Yes. Big Forrester fan.
Ben Morgan.
No.
Gareth Delve. I don't think he had long enough there.
No.
Andy Hazel.
Yeah, good for the club.
Peter Buxton.
Peter Buxton is the name that I wrote down.
I've got a name for you. Junior Parrymore
as well.
That's who I'd go for.
Talking about smashing people.
Yeah, I'd go with Parrymore 8. Who actually... played against Broughton Park for Luton.
Really?
Yeah.
Paramore at 8. Ngera at...
Yeah.
At 7. Then,
7 and...
Then Forrester or Hazel.
Or Buxton at 6.
Or Buxton at 6.
Should we go with Buxton? One club man. He could play 6 or lock.
Let's just go for a massive pack.
He's massive as well.
Was Jake Bohr there? Jake?
Nah, he wasn't. No, he's not in that class.
Mm.
He was there, yeah, but no.
Now, halfbacks, I had a bit of a problem.
Yes. Tough on this.
This is actually a tough one. There's not many people who've had extended spells at Gloucester.
Well, I can tell you this much. When Yashvili was a young kid, he played very well.
Gomesall had some good times there.
Gomesall had a good few years. Peter Richards, average player, but he had an extended period. Rory Lawson's their most appearances for a 9.
Is that right?
Come on, no. Come
but,
on.
No, he's, I'm not saying he oh, should yeah, be yeah. in. I'm yeah, not yeah. saying... Like,
you've seen they've chopped and changed their 9s a lot.
Yeah, I'm saying both 9s
you'd
and
be amazed, 10. Wouldn't you, if Yashvili gets in their team and he only played there before he got to age 20 or something?
I'd go for Gomesall.
Yeah, I would.
Probably.
On balance, maybe, yeah.
Then 10 as well.
Ludovic Mercier for me.
Mercier, yeah. He's the record point scorer.
You kick from anywhere.
The other ones, Freddie Burns, no. Ryan Lamb.
No. Carlos Spencer.
One season,
no good.
No
not great, yeah.
Who else are they?
So I think Mercier.
Yeah. I feel we're missing someone.
Mark Mapletoft. No.
Not him. That
James,
wasn't...
James Hook. No.
No.
No. They've not had anyone with a real extended period of time.
If we're missing anyone, let us know. But yeah, we'll go for him.
And centre,
did Jason Little play there?
Jason Little did play there.
I would look at Jason Little.
Jason Little only for a few seasons. He played. There's four names here: Anthony Allen,
yep,
Mike Tindall, Jason Little, Eliota Fuimina Sapola.
Ah.
Who tweeted at the weekend? By the way, he just said one word: Tuilagi.
I saw that.
So,
any two from them. I know you'd love to have Anthony Allen. He got his 2 England caps playing for Gloucester.
He did, and then he got his career ruined by Andy Robinson. I always think of Tindall more of as a Bath man, to be fair.
Oh, he had a seven or eight seasons.
He had a longer time at Gloucester.
Who did he play more for, Bath or Gloucester?
Both similar. I think he had similar periods, 7 or 8 years for both of them.
Yeah. Tindall, I suppose you can't say not Alan Tindall.
Alan.
Svolopolo, whatever his name is, because he was magnificent. And he's so good to follow on Twitter. He's got so many good views. No, it's got to be him.
Alan and Tindall.
I'd go Alan and Tindall, but...
Up to you.
And then back three. So, James Simpson Daniel.
Done.
Definitely.
Sinbad's
I was watching some of James Simpson Daniel's highlight reels. God, he was good. When he rounded Lomu for that try for England...
Yeah, I remember.
One way he turns, there's one way he turns Lawrence Dallaglio inside out, like twice. Goes one way. Yeah. Lawrence turns around the other way and then doubles back.
It's Simpson Daniel. Do you know how old he is?
34.
32? 33, yeah.
Ooh.
His unfortunate ankle injury a couple of seasons ago.
Johnny May and Charlie Sharples?
I don't know, Ollie Morgan.
Ollie Morgan? Yeah, oh, yeah.
Have we missed a fullback somewhere?
There's Willie Walker had a few good seasons there. I probably would have Johnny
May. Oh, Duncan McRae at 10.
No.
Why?
No.
He's a legend.
No.
And he played very well.
No.
Why?
He wasn't good enough.
Oh, come on.
On the wings, Bolshaw and San Andre had...
Oh, Bolsh.
Good spells there. I'd probably go Johnny May.
And what about Carl Price?
I think he had one Premiership appearance.
What about Leslie
Vinicolo?
Leslie Vinicolo.
The greatest rugby union debut of all time.
No, I think we've discussed this. The greatest rugby union debut of all time was, in fact, Yeston Harris. Three tries from fly half.
That is quite impressive.
In a European Cup game at night.
Vinicolo scored four tries in his debut.
Yeah, that is quite good, isn't it?
It is quite good.
So what's your back three?
Simpson Daniel, Johnny May, Ollie Morgan.
Nice. A quality team. And next week, we will be turning to London Irish.
I've got a 15 for you to assemble. Bath players that played for Gloucester.
There's a lot of back and forth, isn't
there? There's loads. Bolshaw, Tindall, Barkley.
Atwood.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's the other way around.
Well, yeah.
Gloucester played once Bath. Well, I was very, very clear on what the criteria was.
Right, at Rugby Podcast is where you can find us on Twitter. We will be back after Ireland, Wales, Scotland, Italy, and another week closer to a World Cup. Bank holiday weekend, so we'll be releasing just like this one. The podcast will come out on Tuesday morning, so it'll be back when you're on your commute if you're working and whatnot. And with the England squad having been announced by that point, so plenty to talk about. It's getting ever closer. In the meantime, at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, subscribe on iTunes, download the Acast app and listen there. And we will see you next time. Good work, JB.
Cheers, Tim.
Top work, Phil.
Cheers, Tim.
In a bit.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.